I think one of my, maybe the most favorite biblical word is redemption, because it describes what God does in our lives, with our messes, with our mistakes, with our shortfalls. It is the ultimate theme of the Bible. God redeems people's lives, and ultimately He is redeeming us for eternity. We have been now for 2 years in the book of Exodus. I will finish in a couple more weeks, 100 messages out of the book of Exodus. You didn't know the book of Exodus was that long. So the book of Exodus is actually longer than it should have been. Not my sermons, but the actual book in the Bible. We're actually repeating stuff that actually happened before. Any idea why that is? Because chapter 32 is a big mess up. Aaron disobeyed God, made a huge mistake. He led the children of Israel into a great sin of idolatry. They followed, and they suffered a huge setback. They'd been given the Ten Commandments. They were taken away. God couldn't implement them. They suffered consequences and judgment. Moses had to intercede and make several trips, about five of them up on the mountains and interceding. God, in His mercy, spared the Israelites. He reissued the law, the re-implementation. So the book of Exodus is extended. This had all been done before. But because of people's mistakes, you realize that people still make mistakes. And the reason the book of Exodus is still very relevant is because God is still dealing with people's mistakes. He still redeems them. He still turns them around. Now, in the book of Exodus, one of the people who made one of the biggest mistakes of all is Aaron. That's Moses' brother. Because he is the one who actually led that sin of idolatry while Moses was up on the mountain. When Moses came back, he actually confronted him. So it's almost like a double mistake on Aaron's part. And when Moses came back and confronted him, he denied it. He put the blame on the people. The people made him do it. And then this calf, well, it just jumped out of the fire all on its own. He didn't have any idea how that thing got there. So not only did he make the mistake, but he wouldn't accept responsibility or ownership for his mistake. Eventually he did. When God's judgment was leveled against them. So, not very good behavior out of Aaron. Not at all. Not model behavior. Pretty disappointing. But we now reach a chapter. If you were just reading through the Bible, you might be tempted to skip this chapter. We've seen quite a few of these lately that you might be tempted to skip, but you don't want to skip this chapter. It's about Aaron's wardrobe, what he wore. The ornate, costly, beautiful, arrayed priest. Now, why would you want to skip this? Is this about a guy who shouldn't be dressed up like that? He shouldn't even be the high priest. But God forgave him. God redeemed him and allowed him to recover a place after such a huge failure, because that's the kind of God we serve. So if you've made a few mistakes that have been, some of them maybe even overwhelming, that have caused you to wonder if you could ever even serve God in the capacity you have before, you might want to listen to this sermon today. Why was a sinner like Aaron allowed to serve? Well, there is preparation he had to go through. He had to go through this elaborate cleansing of his body, which symbolized his consecration and God's cleansing. He had to confess his sins, and he had to bring sacrifices, two rams and a bull, and he had to put his hands on them. And his sins, and boy did he have a load of them, they were impugned, or they transferred from him to the animals, and the animals were sacrificed. That was for Aaron's sin alone, just him, the high priest, so he could be forgiven. Through the cleansing of the water and the sacrificing of the blood, Aaron was set apart. And he was arrayed in these new, beautifully suited clothes. In Exodus 31, 39:1, it says, from the blue and purple and scarlet yarn, they made woven garments for ministering in the sanctuary. They also made sacred garments for Aaron, as the Lord commanded Moses. Actually, Aaron looked like a replica of the tabernacle. His garments were the same colors, made all out of one cloth. But he had basically four major pieces. And we covered these back in Exodus 28. We'll see them again. He had what is called the ephod, the most famous of his priestly garments. It's more like a sleeveless vest. He had a breastpiece that went just over his chest right here. Then he had his robe, and then he had a turban. Verse 2, they made the ephod of gold and of blue, purple and scarlet yarn, and of finely twisted linen. They hammered out thin sheets of gold and cut out strands to be worked into the blue, purple, scarlet yarn and fine linen, the work of a skilled craftsman. They made shoulder pieces for the ephod, which were attached to two of its corners. Now these shoulder pieces were the most important part, this sleeveless vest. The straps that held this little vest, the shoulder part's the most important part. You'll find out why. Its skillfully woven waistband was like it, of one piece with the ephod and made with gold and with blue, purple, and scarlet yarn, with finely twisted linen, as the Lord commanded Moses. Now the ephod actually became, in the several hundreds of years that the priesthood existed, the tabernacle existed for over 500 years, the ephod came to symbolize more than anything the garments of the robe of the priest. And this is what it says, verse 6. They mounted the onyx stones in gold filigree settings and engraved them like a seal with the names of the sons of God. This is why I said the straps that hold this up are so important. Well, this is how they are. These are some straps right here. So they have gold filigree. This is woven and soldered into by extraordinary craftsmen that hold this up. But that's just part of the craftsmanship. There are stones on these straps. It says, with the names of the sons of Israel. So they have, he has six of the names of the tribes here, and he has six of the names of the tribe here on the strap for the ephod. Then they fastened them on the shoulder pieces of the ephod as memorial stones for the sons of Israel, as the Lord commanded Moses. So every time that Moses, whenever Aaron put on the ephod, he was symbolizing that he was bearing all the children of Israel on his shoulders. He bore them. So whenever he made sacrifices of atonement, whenever he washed in the basin, whenever he trimmed the lights, whenever he placed the bread on the table, whenever he offered incense of prayer, whenever he stood once a year before the Ark of the Covenant, before the mercy seat, in the Holy of Holies, those names are on his shoulders. He bore them before the Lord. But the high priest also wore a breastplate. This is a separate piece. It's right here. It's described in verse 18. They fashioned the breastplate, the work of a skilled craftsman. They made it like the ephod, of gold and a blue, purple, scarlet yarn and finely twisted linen. And remember, the courtyard of the tabernacle had a white curtain all the way around it. Except for the entrance, 15 feet wide. It was a real nice white entrance. It's purple. Not by accident it's purple. It's purple because it represents blood. The only way that they would get to God is through the sacrifice of blood. And that entrance is only one entrance. The priest garments match the entrance of the tabernacle. He will be the one shedding the blood for them. It was square, a span long, this is the breastplate, a span wide. It's folded double, so it's got a pocket. They folded it double, so it has a pocket right there. Then they mounted four rows of precious stones on it. So we got four stones, we got 12 stones on this breastplate. In the first row, there was a ruby, a topaz, and a beryl. And the second row, a turquoise, and a sapphire, and an emerald. The third row, how do you say that? Jacinth? Some of you would know. I don't buy too much of this stuff. An agate, an amethyst. In the fourth row, a chrysolite, an onyx, and a jasper. So he has the 12 tribes of Israel here, and the 12 tribes here. Six on each shoulder, and 12 right here. This symbolizes they are close to his heart, so that he could sympathize with their need. And here, he bore them before the Lord. The best, verse 15, for the breastplate they made braided chains of pure gold like a rope. They made two gold filigree settings and two gold rings and fastened the rings to two of the corners of the breastpiece. They fastened the two gold chains to the rings at the corners of the breastpiece and the other ends of the chains to the two settings, attaching them to the shoulder pieces of the ephod at the front. This keeps it in the position of where it needs to be, so that those stones are always right here over the heart of the high priest, and these stones are always over his shoulders. Next comes the robe. It's a seamless robe, all made of one piece, and it's royal blue. Verse 22, they made the robe of the ephod entirely of blue cloth, the work of a weaver, with an opening in the center of the robe, like the opening of a collar, and a band around this opening so that it would not tear. They made pomegranates of blue, purple, and scarlet yarn, finely twisted linen around the hem of the robe. Now these pomegranates, they were actually made pomegranates to hang around there with bells at the bottom. Pomegranates, very symbolic because of all the fruits. How many like pomegranates? How many know what a pomegranate is? Okay. It's got more seeds than any other fruit. It symbolizes fruitfulness. That's why God chose it. It has all of those seeds. Well, let me tell you, when the high priest went into the Holy of Holies, he had the pomegranates on there and he had the bells because that was for his own life. Without them, he would die. This called for explicit instructions. And he definitely followed it. It showed the wholeness, being one piece, and the integrity that God demanded from his priest. Those bells were for his safety. There's one more piece, his turban. Verse 27. For Aaron and his sons, they made tunics of fine linen, the work of a weaver, and the turban of fine linen, the linen headbands, and the undergarments of finely twisted linen, the sash was of finely twisted linen and blue and purple and scarlet yarn, the work of an embroiderer, and as the Lord commanded. These are actually the whole special garments are extraordinarily ornate and beautiful. They made the plate, the sacred diadem, out of pure gold and engraved on it like an inscription on a seal. So this turban that went up, it had these words written on it, "Holy to the Lord." Then they fastened a blue cord to it to attach it to the turban as the Lord commanded Moses. The extraordinary outfit. No one ever wore anything like it. So when the people saw this priest, they knew he was consecrated for service for God. They couldn't go in the temple, not in the holy place, or especially the Holy of Holies, and he can only go there once a year. But this priest would go for them. Chapter 28:2 actually says what the purpose of all these garments were. So I'm going back to chapter 28 to read this. Make sacred garments for your brother Aaron to give him dignity and honor. Tell the skilled men to whom I have given wisdom in such matters that they are to make garments for Aaron for his consecration so he may serve me as priest. These garments were to demonstrate the holiness of this operation and of the man who wore the clothes, of the glory of God and of the beauty of God. The look of the priest was to match the function of what he did. This was important business. Worshiping God was very serious business, and God was to be taken serious. I guess if there's a message in the Bible, especially the Old Testament, it would be take God serious. Take God serious. Do you remember the angels that were sent into Sodom to rescue Lot and his family? These angels, they go in there and they say, look, this place is going to be destroyed. We're really here because you got an uncle who has really some powerful praying ability, and God's answered his prayer, and we've been sent here to get you out of here. This place is going to be destroyed. Do you know what Lot does? We have to go right now. We got a concert at 3 o'clock tomorrow. Can we postpone this? He actually really tries to talk them out of it. The angel said, this place will be destroyed. It will never be remembered. There won't even be anything that grows here. Do you know where Sodom is today? It's at the bottom of the Red Sea, the Dead Sea. Not anything growing there, just like the angel said on that day. These hard-headed, luggerhead Lot and his family, the angels finally get them to the outside, and they say, escape to the mountains, because God's going to rain fire down from heaven. And Lot says, oh man, I can't make it to those mountains. Can I go over here to this little town over here? It's closer. And the angel says, all right, get over there. I'll wait till you get to that town. He says, I got one more instruction. When you're heading out of here, don't look back. Don't turn around and don't look back. The angels are gone. So Lot, his two daughters, they take off. Some of them, they had fiancés, but they wouldn't go. The two daughters and the wife, they take off. They're heading out. Evidently, they start to hear the rumble of fire, because it may have come from the salt pits and went up into the air and fell back down. But they started hearing something. And Lot's wife, she turns around. That was the last thing she ever did. She became a pillar of salt. So I think when you read that story, it comes out pretty clear. Take God serious. So this high priest, this clothes, this really wasn't for show. It was all about seriousness. Now, there's still churches today where the preacher wears clothes. Some denominations do that. In Puerto Rico, we lived there, you know, for 5.5 years. And at one point, we were in a theater for a lot of years. And I hated that theater because of all the popcorn that was there. Because they used it at Saturday night, and then Sunday mornings, we would take over this theater. It just smelled dirty, and I always prayed to get out of there. Had rats in that theater eating all the popcorn on Sunday morning. I'm serious. I turned the lights on and they'd scurry out. I finally got a company to come in and shoot them. I'm not kidding. They came with guns and shot rats. Big rats this big. I never told the people about the rats because then everybody come to church. But I finally got us out of there. And what we did, I negotiated a deal with a Lutheran church, so we could share their building. So they used it in the morning, and then we started our service at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And that was nice. It was a nice church. And I actually became very good friends with a lot of the Lutheran people. The lady that pastored the church, she's still there to this day. And so I would preach for her. And you have to kind of walk up in this pulpit like that. I didn't use it for my service, but for their service they did. And she had the robes. And she says, you know, why don't you put my robes on? Because, you know, people feel more comfortable. So I put them on, and I walked up, you know, where she usually stood to preach, and I said, Martha, I can't do this. I'll be thinking about these robes, and I'll forget my sermon. But these robes had so much meaning, because God intended for them to have meaning. But the whole purpose of Aaron, the whole purpose of the robes, was not an end in itself. Aaron was a signpost. The tabernacle was a signpost. It all pointed to something else. It all pointed to a greater high priest who was yet to come. A superior high priest. And his name is Jesus. I'd like to introduce you to him now as I compare him with Aaron, the high priest. In fact, David wrote this in Psalm 132. He said, "May your priests be clothed with righteousness. May your saints sing for joy." See, the priest, David is saying the priests should be clothed with righteousness. Not just these beautiful garments, but should have the righteousness of God. Aaron wasn't righteous in himself, and if he had any righteousness, it came from God. We need a high priest because our righteousness will never clothe us. There are some similarities between Aaron and Jesus. Aaron offers sacrifice for our sins, for the sins of Israel, just the way Jesus does for us. Aaron brought his people into God's presence the way Jesus brings us into his presence. Aaron prayed for the people as Jesus prays for us. Aaron carried the people on his shoulders and he carried them on his heart. Jesus carries us. He carries our burdens. And when we say cast your cares on him, it's because Jesus can carry your burden. And when we say we have a high priest that can sympathize with your need, it's because he carries you close to his heart. Aaron had a hat that said, "Holy unto the Lord." Our priest is holy unto God. And one day when he comes back from heaven, he will be revealed in such a holy array of garment that we won't even be able to look at it. But let me tell you how superior he is. First of all, Jesus ministers in a superior place. Aaron ministered in the tabernacle that was made by God, the only building on this earth ever made by God. But Jesus ministers in the tabernacle in heaven. Hebrews 8. The point of what we are saying is this. We do not have such a high priest who sat down at the right hand of the throne, the majesty in heaven. We do have such a high priest. He sat down at the right hand of the Father in heaven, and who serves in the sanctuary, the true tabernacle set up by the Lord, not man. Chapter 9, for Christ did not enter a man-made sanctuary that was only a copy of the true one. He entered heaven itself, now to appear for us in God's presence. He's there in the one true tabernacle. He ministers with superior righteousness. Aaron had to go through great ritual, put on all of those clothes. First, he had to cleanse himself and be prepared to put on all those clothes that represented righteousness. He had to sacrifice animals so that he would be righteous. But our high priest is righteous. Chapter 7 of Hebrews. Such a high priest meets our need. One who was holy, blameless, pure, set apart from sinners, exalted above the heavens. Unlike the other high priest, he does not need to offer sacrifices day by day. No bulls were shed for Jesus. No goats were shed for him. First, for his own sins. The high priest first had to sacrifice for his own sins and then for the sins of the people. He sacrificed for their sins once. Jesus sacrificed for their sins once for all when he offered himself. For the law appoints as high priest men who are weak, but the oath which came after the law appointed the Son who has been made perfect forever. Jesus also ministers with a superior sympathy. The high priest Aaron carried the people here, and he was to sympathize for their need as much as he could. But this is what our high priest does. Hebrews 4. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weakness. Why? Aaron couldn't know everything the people were going through, but our high priest does because he has. He faced every temptation you will face. He has felt the need in his own body. But we have one who has been tempted in every way just as we are, yet was without sin. Let us then approach the throne of grace with confidence so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. This priest ministers with superior longevity. Aaron's dead, and so are his sons, and so are the priests who followed, but not this priest. Hebrews 7, now there have been many of those priests since death prevented them from continuing in office. But because Jesus lives forever, did you hear that? This priest lives forever. He has a permanent priesthood, therefore he is able to save completely those who come to God through him because he always lives to intercede for them. But best of all is the sacrifice that Jesus offered. It was superior to any sacrifice Aaron brought. He would take a perfect lamb, one that had been set aside for a year, no blemishes. He would take the best goat. He would take the best bull. But that sacrifice would endure for only a while till they would find another atonement lamb. Jesus' sacrifice was himself. Hebrews 9:12. He did not enter by means of the blood of goats and calves, but he entered the most holy place once for all by his own blood. And notice what he obtained when he entered with his own blood into that tabernacle in heaven, having obtained eternal redemption. Nor did he enter heaven to offer himself again and again, the way the high priests enter the most holy place every year with the blood that is not his own. Then Christ would have had to suffer many times since the creation of the world, but now he has appeared once for all at the end of the ages to do away with sin by the sacrifice of himself, because he is our perfect sacrifice. But I'd like you to notice out of Hebrews 9:14, the purpose for which Jesus has sacrificed himself. This is so important. Well, you say he's done this so that we could be saved. Yes, that's true. He's done this so that we could receive eternal life. Yes, that's true. He's done this so that we could go to heaven. Yes, that's true. But if that's all we know, we miss something here. Look at this verse. How much more then will the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself unblemished to God, cleanse our conscience, it says, from acts that lead to death. Now notice the rest of the verse. So that we may serve the living God. Jesus died on the cross so we can serve God, so you can come out of your failures, out of your shortcomings, out of your life of impotence and your life of complete sinfulness and serve God. It's what you call redemption. Jesus redeems us to serve God. Here's a few pictures written by the New Testament writers of what a Christian looks like once they have really grasped the concept of redemption. They've committed their life to Christ. This is what they look like. Peter says, and Peter would be one to write this. He had so many mistakes. He denied the Lord. He failed miserably. I can see him weeping, hiding, but he grasped it. And he says, this is what your life looks like once you've grasped Jesus' sacrifice and applied his blood to your life. As you come to him, the living stone, rejected by men, but chosen by God and precious to him, you also, like living stones, are being built into a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood. We're like Aaron, a holy priesthood, offering spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. Again, Peter writes, but you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people belonging to God, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. And John, another disciple, in the book of Revelation writes, to him who loves us and has freed us from our sins by his blood. Now, we don't offer sacrifices today because there's no need. There's no other sacrifice to be offered. To do so would be disbelief. All we do is accept the sacrifice that's been made for us. So what sacrifices do we make? There are two. The first one is mentioned by Paul. in Romans 12:1, therefore I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices. This is our act of worship. So we can make that, we bring ourselves in consecration, and that is what we do as holy priests. We first offer ourselves. Then what other sacrifice? Well, the writer of Hebrews says, through Jesus, therefore, let us continually offer to God a sacrifice of praise, the fruit of lips that confess his name. Or Peter says it like this, offering spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. As the priest had that beautiful, those beautiful garments, and he had this turban that said, holy unto God. You can be holy unto God. When you dedicate your life to Christ, you can be holy, doing your daily business, not idling away your time, not grasping for material gain, not greedy. You can be called to holiness, living at home in peace with your husband, your wife, your children, your parents, your family members. We're called to holiness so that our thoughts are pleasing to God. Our behaviors, our actions. They aren't motivated by lust or bitterness or greed. We're called to holiness so that our speech, all of our speech. I say this because Christians seem to be more and more influenced by the world around them, so that their speech reflects more of the world than it does of Christ. Our speech should always edify those around us. There should be a holiness in our speech. And our actions should show mercy, grace, and there should be sexual purity to our lives. You know how we do this? It's the robe that's put around you when you come to Christ. One of my favorite verses out of the book of Isaiah. I just have a few favorites. Isaiah 61:10. This is one to outline. In my Bible, Isaiah 61:10 is barely readable. I've outlined it till I went through the other side. So I have to really strain. But I don't have any trouble finding it because that's where it used to be. Isaiah 61:10. I delight greatly in the Lord. My soul rejoices in my God, for he hath clothed me with garments of salvation. So remember those beautiful garments that Aaron wore. God has garments for you. Garments of salvation, and arrayed me in a robe of righteousness, as a bridegroom adorns his head like a priest, and as a bride adorns herself with jewels. That's the righteousness of Christ that comes to you when you receive Christ. It's the transformation. It's what the Father did to the prodigal. Bring me that robe. It's God's righteousness, all demonstrated in the wardrobe of Aaron to our superior high priest in what he has done for us. Heavenly Father, we thank you.